He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this? And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge Podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin, senior Lakers insider for Clutch Points. And today on the show, we're going to be talking about, you know what? The Lakers handled business. The Lakers beat the crap out of the Denver Nuggets. They improve to 43-25 on the year and are a win away from significantly outstripping our expectations going into the six game and in 8 nights stretch that the Lakers were going to. They ensured themselves a split through here. They ensured themselves a 3-3 run. But hey, 4-2, a little bit better than 3-3. So we'll be talking about this game and the outcome of it and its impact on the standings and some, you know, particular performances. And I also just kind of want to talk about like what this team is capable of, because I think we're starting to really get a sense of that. Now, look, I'm not going to overreact to the Lakers beating the crap out of the Denver Nuggets, who didn't have Jokic, didn't have Jamal Murray, but the Lakers didn't have a certain somebody either in this one. And we're really starting to see Austin come into his own, and we're really starting to see Luka come into his own. And I think that paints a really exciting picture for what the Lakers are capable of here moving forward. I also took a couple seconds before I went live here to grab a couple highlights from this one. Seeing as we're not going to have Raj here with us, I may as well break up the monotony of my voice with some of the more interesting stretches or fun plays from throughout the night, fun calls and stuff like that. So we'll play some of those as well. And at the end of the show, if you guys have any questions or comments, hit me up and I'll see how much time we have to be able to get to those after the show. So let's go ahead and dive on in. Quick reminder, please do hit that subscribe button if you guys are tuning in here live on YouTube. If you guys are on Twitter, head on over to youtube.com/@LakersLounge to find the show there. And then if you guys are tuned in here, no matter where it is that you're tuned in, hit that like button. That like button costs you nothing. It literally just costs effort to go bloop and then hit that like button. So go ahead and hit that. What does take a little bit more effort is to hit the share button and then, you know, either tweet out the link or tell your friends about the link or whatever. That takes a little bit more effort. So if you do that, that's going above and beyond, but just hit the like button. That like button helps quite a bit. And then if you guys are listening in the morning via podcast, hit that subscribe button, hit that 5-star review button. And then subscribe your closest relatives, who wouldn't know or care to the show and boost our numbers that way. But anyway, let's go ahead and dive on in though. I know it was kind of a sleeper, a snoozer because of who wasn't playing in this game, but still, I think the fact that the Lakers are kind of clearing that mental hurdle, or have, it would appear, cleared that mental hurdle of this Nuggets team, I think that's worth talking about a little bit. So let's get into that. I want to start with, in terms of just, well, you know what? Let's break down the game. 120-108 was the final there. Excuse me. my son has been coughing directly in my face, and it's just like sitting right here. I'm not as bad as I normally am in like allergy season and kid coughing in my face season, but it's just annoying. But anyway, the final in this one, 120-108, the Lakers again improved to 43-25. The Nuggets fall to 44-26. The Lakers split their series with Denver, which is meaningful because the Lakers will likely win their division and Denver will almost assuredly not win their division, which gives the Lakers the first tiebreak in the standings there. So if it comes down to the Lakers and Nuggets for the 2 or 3 seed or the 3 or 4 seed or the 4 or 5 seed, the Lakers now have the upper hand by way of this split here with the Denver Nuggets. You look at some of the performances. I think most notably, Luka came out and absolutely obliterated the Nuggets in the first quarter, highlighted by this call from that was Locked On Lakers when he came on the show then. But still, I've bumped into him a couple times. I'm going to call him. I can't call him. You know what, John, if you want to be called a friend of the show, come on the show. Let's just look at it that way. But here's John Island on the call and a really cool angle by way of the Lakers official Twitter at Luka's final field goal of the first quarter.
Lakers the other way. Gabe Vincent into the front court, drop pass for Luka. Luka in the backcourt, 40-footer, good again! 20-point first quarter for Luka.
He was unbelievable. I think he finished with 21 in that first quarter, significantly quiet in the second quarter. I think he finished with 25 in the first half. And then overall for the game, finished with 31 points, 9 boards and 7 assists, did have a couple of steals as well as a block shot, turned the ball over 6 times. I think started forcing things a little bit there in the second half, especially when the Lakers offense went really kind of stagnant. And I think to Luka's credit, what Denver was essentially doing was like playing into the fieriness that Luka plays with. And they were initially letting him cook. And then, I mean, by letting him cook, I mean, Michael Porter Jr. found himself on an island and he and Luka proceeded to cook Michael Porter Jr. out on that island. But then eventually Denver started blitzing Luka. And because of the way that Luka had it going earlier in the game, I think he started kind of forcing some shots, forcing some tougher passes, when in reality, all the Lakers needed him to do was just make the pass to the short roll and allow that player to go out and create either for himself in that situation or for somebody else. And in that third quarter, when the Lakers got back to their better offense, Luka was just hitting that short roll. And that short roll was either throwing lobs to Jackson Hayes or, Hayes only had 6 points on the night, so he only had 3 buckets. But either it was a lob. There was one lob from, I believe, Dorian to Jackson in that third quarter, or Jordan Goodwin was found in that short roll, and he was either making plays for himself or others. Essentially, the point being here that the Lakers offense looked significantly better when Luka just let the game come to him. If Michael Porter Jr. was out on an island, he was cooking Michael Porter Jr. If Christian Brown was out on an island, he was cooking Christian Brown. And then if Denver was blitzing him, he was accepting that blitz, making the right pass, and the Lakers were operating from there, either with immediate actions or immediate advantages from that short roll, or a swing play where Austin would be able to, kind of cook in that kind of space. But when the Lakers looked their best, it was what JJ talked about after that Brooklyn game, where rather than taking shortcuts, the Lakers just kind of trust the offense, trust the game, trust their execution, and trust each other to be able to really kind of put Denver to sleep there in that third quarter. But overall, fun game, especially fun at the beginning part of this game. It went when Luka was absolutely torching the Nuggets. And then credit to him and credit to the Lakers for kind of backing off, recognizing, hey, we're the better team. Let's not try to do too much here, and let's actually handle business the way that we can. And eventually they did. Elsewhere in this game for the Lakers, we did see Austin, I think, continue his really good play. 8 of 16 from the field, 2 of 7 from 3-point range, which is, obviously below his averages. But 22 points, 8 assists, 5 boards, couple of steals, a block shot, only one turnover on the night. Luka handled the ball a lot more in this one. But when Austin had it, he was making all of the right decisions. And most particularly, you know, we've kind of talked about how Austin will kind of recognize the moment and go on a bit of a run on his own. Here are two key plays that Austin made when the game was getting just a little too close. Here's a couple of them. So we'll start with this one. I believe this is the three that Austin hit that they got a couple bounces, but was huge nonetheless.
For 14 for Westbrook. He's one of four starters right now in double figures for the Nuggets. Chasing back after the loose basketball, Reeves. Two-man game with Finney Smith. Austin got to get a bounce, and he gets it. The shooter's touch.
You see the score there. It was it got all the way down to, like, I wouldn't say nervous time, but it was certainly, you know, the momentum was a little stagnant there. The Lakers needed a big bucket, and Austin stepped up and made that three. On the other end, I believe he got a rebound, and then the next play or a couple plays later, Austin had this possession where he really kind of punched home Denver's last chances at winning this game.
Seven with the basketball. Still with it, Reeves.
Austin Reeves, boy, when he dances with you, you're doing the waltz. He's breakdancing.
Fun game there from Austin. Again, he finishes 22 points, went 4-4 from the free throw line, 5 boards, 8 assists, couple of steals, a block shot, and only the one turnover. Dorian led everybody with a plus 26 on the night, and then Luka was second with plus 20. Austin came in third with a plus 13. And all of those numbers, frankly, made a whole bunch of sense. Dorian was especially really good in this one. But, you know, it's funny, on a day where a lot of the conversation was about, like, is Austin, like, the top whatever third best option in the league, whatever, like, Lou Williams and Chandler Parsons. I'll just say this. When it comes to, like, winning basketball or analyzing winning basketball or understanding what it takes to win basketball games or win at the highest levels, two of the least, like, or two of the voices I'm least interested in the entire scope of the former player media market, Lou Williams, Chandler Parsons rank real high up there. Chandler Parsons, like, tanked organizations because of the contracts they signed him to. And Lou Williams is on the record saying that, well, for one thing, we know Lou Williams got himself into trouble in the bubble because he went out and got himself some lemon pepper wings from a strip club. And then the next thing, you know, years after the fact, rather than be like, yeah, I was kind of immature or whatever, no, Lou Williams' analysis of that situation was like, yeah, we all decided that it wasn't worth winning a championship in the bubble. So those are the two people that apparently are out there analyzing, like, what option. It was funny to see those both of those idiots, like, sitting there saying, like, oh, gosh, what even is a third option? What's a third option on a championship team? It's Chris Bosh. It's Kevin Love. It's Aaron Gordon, the guy that the Lakers just played against tonight. It's Klay Thompson or Draymond Green. Like, the third best option, that's where you guys draw the line. Like it's only the top two is all that matters. That's it. What are you talking about? It's Ray Allen in the Big Three Celtics era. What even is a third option? Neither of you. How about that? neither of you guys were ever as high as third options on good basketball teams. And therefore, maybe you shouldn't be speaking on the makeup of winning teams. For the Nuggets, it was really kind of a bummer here. So Jokic and Murray, they both sat out the game against Golden State. Murray is dealing with an ankle issue. Jokic is dealing with an elbow issue and then some other maladies. I mean, you look at the guy, he's always bleeding on the court. So he's clearly always dealing with some stuff. I was shocked that those guys didn't suit up for this one. So they must really be dealing with some stuff. It's also March, and this is something that the league is going to have to adjust for, where essentially the way that a lot of these like premier teams, the way that their schedule goes is they'll backload a lot of their schedules because football is taking place in the first half of the season. And the NBA thinks that they won't get any eyes on any premier matchups in the first part of the season because everybody's top focus is on football. But in reality, like, that's when all the teams are freshest. So I'm not saying completely stack the beginning part of every team's schedule, but also don't assume the fetal position if you're the NBA and backload everybody's schedules so that in March everybody plays all of their top matchups, because everybody is right around the corner from the postseason. Everybody's focus is getting and staying healthy for a month from now when the games really, really, really matter. So like play, like I think the Lakers went like 2 full months between Denver Nuggets matchups, you know, or if they even saw them in the first part of the season at all. Like it really annoys me how much the NBA really kind of runs and hides away from the NFL, and this game, you know, and the lack of the star talent on it. I heard Mike Breen on the broadcast saying like, yeah, we were really looking forward to this one, but LeBron isn't playing and Jokic isn't playing and Jamal Murray isn't playing, and boy, shoot, this sure sucks. And it's like, yeah, everybody's focus. LeBron is 40 years old. He wants to be healthy and fresh for the postseason. Jokic knows, we saw what the Nuggets look like without Nikola Jokic. So the Nuggets also know that they got to get and keep that guy healthy heading into the postseason. End of the day here, it's a bummer that this game didn't have the star power that it should have probably had. And that also goes for like the last time these two teams played, like a few days ago, where again that game didn't have Luka, that game didn't have LeBron. The league basically wasted this matchup or this rivalry, this budding rivalry between the Lakers and the Nuggets, by backloading all of those matchups for after the NFL season, when in reality, Lakers fans, Nuggets fans, and NBA fans are going to tune into these two teams playing against each other whenever you schedule those games. So, I thought this was a big missed opportunity for a league that is looking for more of these tentpole matchups. I also wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, the ceiling of these Lakers, right? And obviously in the first half, we saw the Lakers shoot absolutely bananas from 3-point range. They made 9 threes in the first 9 minutes of the game, and finished the game shooting 16 of 38. Now, obviously that kind of fell off over the course of the game, but 42% from 3-point range for the Lakers as a team. The Nuggets shot 13 of 39. That is 33%. I think the Lakers are kind of slow to the memo that Aaron Gordon is actually a good shooter right now, or at this point in his career. This season, he's been stellar from 3-point range, and the Lakers were just giving him threes. He went 5 of 9 from 3-point range, 9 of 14 overall from the field, 26 points to go with 11 boards, no assists. So I guess technically here, the Lakers basically just said, all right, Aaron Gordon, if you're going to score 50 and Denver is going to beat us that way, then that's how you guys are going to beat us. But yeah, I would rather not see that guy get into a rhythm shooting the basketball. Russell Westbrook was very clearly trying to go out and win this one on his own. 4 of 14 from the field for him, 1 of 4 from 3-point range, 3 of 5 from the free throw line, including one air ball that I'm sure fans really enjoyed. 12 points, 9 assists, 4 boards, couple of steals, was a minus 15 on the game. It was just an outmatched Denver team, but I want to build on that point. You guys can tell me whether or not you felt the same way in the second quarter, where, you know, the Lakers had built like a 30-point lead and then it dwindled down into the teens and then it kind of hung there in the teens in the third quarter. And you're like, no way. No way. Like, come on. The Lakers aren't actually going to lose the same way to this stupid team, even though they don't have they don't have Jokic. The Lakers aren't actually going to do this, right? Then eventually, you know, I talked about the series of plays that the Lakers made and put the game back out of reach and all that stuff. I think there is real value in beating the Nuggets twice this season. In a year where the Lakers might just see the Nuggets in the second round, might see them in the Western Conference Finals. You're not going to see them in the first round because I think the Lakers are clearly going to finish with a top four-ish seed or whatever, so long as enough guys stay healthy. But I do think it really matters here that the Lakers, over the course of this season, can walk away from this regular season matchup with this team. And it's, I don't know how many fans here, I wish Raj was here because it was a fun bit, but it's like 300 where, you know, you throw the spear and yeah, you don't get the kill shot. You can't get the kill shot in the regular season on the Nuggets, but we have seen them bleed, right? That emperor at the end, you know, where he's like, you know, it like knocks out the rings on the side of his face and he's like holding his face right here and there's blood streaming off camera because Zack Snyder just loves himself a good blood trail. Like, that's kind of how I feel about how this regular season matchup has gone between these two teams, where, and this isn't just an Anthony Davis team or a thing. This is an entirety of the roster makeup, and it's a J.J. Redick thing versus a Darvin Ham thing. The Lakers, when things weren't going very well, they were able to take a breather, call timeout, and or go into the locker room at halftime, whatever needed to be said, whenever it needed to be said, push the right buttons, get back to the offense that they know that they're capable of playing and beat the crap out of this Nuggets team without Jokic, right? And you compare this to how the game went where the Nuggets did have Jokic, did have Murray, and it took a Murray three-pointer on the final possession of the game to finally sink these Lakers. The Nuggets at no point in this game actually had a chance at winning it. At no point. It got a little nervous here or there, but at no point in this game did the Nuggets ever actually have a chance at winning this thing. And you compare that how the game went the last time the Lakers played against them, even though they didn't have LeBron and then they didn't have Luka. And this is very much a matchup where that confidence, I don't know if it's completely swung back in the Lakers' favor here, because that kind of thing can only happen with playoff success. But this is a Lakers team that when it walks onto the court, maintains a significantly higher belief in its possibilities against this Nuggets team or this Nuggets core. And shouts to Calvin Booth for screwing up the roster. Shouts to Rob Pelinka for building a better roster, and shouts to JJ Redick for his and I wrote about this today for Clutch Points, the level of play and discipline and execution he demands out of this Lakers team. All of those things kind of come together, and you see this swing, this momentum swing back in the Lakers' favor here. Not, maybe not fully. We'll see if we do get a playoff matchup here between these two teams, and it feels kind of destined. We'll see what that actually looks like if it actually takes place. But it does feel important to finish off this head to head, tied 2-2, in the last couple of games. The last three games, especially since the Lakers traded for Luka. One, the Lakers beat the crap out of the Nuggets the first time. Second, the Lakers played the Nuggets all the way to the final possession without Luka, without LeBron. Third, beat the crap out of the Nuggets without LeBron, even though the Nuggets didn't have Jokic and didn't have Murray. So like that, those final three games here heading into the postseason, if that is indeed the next time the Lakers see this Nuggets team, there's going to be a hell of a lot more belief from everybody on this roster at what it can do against that Nuggets squad that has absolutely tormented this organization for the last few years. All right, let's go ahead and dive on into some of your guys's. I didn't even mention Rui. Lakers didn't have Rui in this one, or in the last time that the Lakers played the Nuggets. So it is. I kind of want to see them in the postseason. I can't believe I'm saying it. I'm probably might regret it. I don't know, but I really kind of want to see this stupid Nuggets team. I want to see them in the postseason. Bring it on, Adam. Bring it on, Matt. Bring it on, DNVR. All of you guys, bring it on. I want to see you fuckers in the postseason. Why not? All right, let's actually get to these super comments here, which means we get to play this thing. Fuck Washington! In Denver. All right, first things first here from Justin Tindall writing, watching Luka in the first reminded me of mid-20s Kobe and Jerry West would have never traded him. LOL, Phoenix is in the 10 seed now. Memphis lost tonight also. Yeah, it's a good night for the Lakers. I'm going to take a quick look here at the standings. Which again, the Lakers currently sit third. They sit a game behind the Houston Rockets. Same number of losses as the Rockets. The Lakers have just played two fewer games. The Nuggets sit they sit at the same record as the Lakers, though the Nuggets do have one additional loss. You can't make up losses over the course of the over the course of a season. So the Lakers have the upper hand there and have that tiebreaker, as we talked about. So that's helpful. Memphis now sits two games back of the Lakers. They just played their 70th game. So 12 games left to make up two losses there. That's enough time to do that if maybe things don't go all that well for the Lakers. And then you have Golden State in the sixth seed at 40-29. I think the Lakers, unless there's some calamity, the Lakers should have this division tied up in fairly short order. If the Lakers reside in that 2-3 seed, now you're looking at a game against right now it's between the Clippers a series potentially against the Clippers or against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Oh man, I don't really want to face either of those teams. the Clippers have Kawhi looking incredibly spry. They beat the Cavs pretty soundly last night while I was watching that game. And then Minnesota has played really good basketball of late. They have kind of figured out the fit there with Julius Randle. Oklahoma City is going to be pretty thrilled to be able to face, either the King, probably it's going to be the Kings or the Clippers or Timberwolves, depending on who matches up or wins that second play-in game, but I guess technically third play-in game. If the Lakers do continue to sit there in the three spot, they would play the Golden State Warriors as things are currently situated. Maybe Memphis slides down there. They've been in like a weird spot. They're 5-5 over their last 10. And you know, things, their fan base is growing a little restless there. So maybe Memphis slides down to the sixth seed, but probably if you're the three seed, you're going to be playing against the Golden State Warriors. And then if you win that one, then you play Houston in the second round, without home court advantage. And then you would play the winner of OKC and Denver in the Western Conference Finals. My point here being, especially from 8 on through up, you know, all the way up to the one seed, these West playoffs are going to be a freaking bloodbath, man. Like these, the West is absolutely incredible. It remains incredible. And, you know, that's with New Orleans having like an nth degree worst case scenario type of season this year. That's with San Antonio, you know, with Wemby not quite ready to, you know, vault his team kind of single-handedly. They'll be tougher next year. Portland has been playing better basketball. Dallas has been a disaster. And then, you know, Nico Harrison traded away Luka Doncic. The West is just Utah might get Cooper Flagg this upcoming draft season. The Western Conference is already brutal, and it appears to be a brutal conference here moving forward for what appears to be the rest of our lives. But these playoffs in particular, like I know I already kind of see it in my mentions a little bit. Is it worth it for the Lakers to do this so that maybe you ensure this matchup? They're from 1 to 8, there are like 2 matchups maybe that I would be really confident against. Houston and Memphis are like those other teams, those only teams, and it's just because they're young, they're going to be even tougher next year too. So yeah, these standings are going to be brutal. And I don't even know why I'm on this standings thing. I completely segued away from the point of the question. But yeah, the Justin writing that Luka performance in the first quarter reminded him of mid-20s Kobe. I'll also make this point. I saw Raj catch some shit for saying this on Twitter the other day from LeBron stans who I don't even know why you're fighting Lakers fans over this, but the way that the crowd responds to Luka in particular, because I think Luka has a little bit more in common with Kobe in how just absolutely nasty a competitor he is. And his like screams to the crowd and yelling "and one" and yelling "bleep you" to every player who thinks they belong on the court with him, you know, even though they play for the other team. Like the crowd just really, his kind of aura, as the kids say, really resonates well with this Lakers fan base. And like that first quarter, like he had Lakers fans eating out of his hand in that first quarter. And the fact that he's younger than LeBron was when LeBron got to LA, and again, those kind of closer similarities there to Kobe, like all of that kind of leads to I think what will likely be a closer relationship between city and player. But regardless, the Lakers have both of those guys. I thought that entire conversation was incredibly online. And at the end of the day, I can't wait to see LeBron get back and watch the Lakers fan base respond to not just Luka playing the way that he can, but also LeBron playing the way that he can, and see how far this team can possibly go. Because my hopes are real high for this team. All right, let's. Yeah, I'm sorry. I could like hear myself saying it. Aura. Like I should put on here. You know, I got to put my hat way up high like this, right? So that it looks like I'm balding. How do you do, fellow kids? Let's talk about aura. But you guys know what I meant. I swear, I wasn't trying to sound young. I just ran out of words to use. Let's go. Let's scroll on up to the top here, and and get back to this game as we watched it. Yeah. Yes. RoboCop. Perfect. Another analogy here. Like Batman said, the Nuggets do bleed, right? It's you know, with that scene that RoboCop was using there is when you know, Batman was able to get Superman with a little bit of kryptonite there, and it cut the skin, and he's like, oh, so you do bleed. Good to know. You know, now it is a completely ridiculous thing, right? Because Superman could just kind of flick Batman and Batman would fall into, you know, disintegrate into a zillion pieces. But at the end of the day, though, like that's how this matchup has gone over the last few years. You know, the Nuggets just kind of flicked the Lakers and ended their season. In this case, though, after the couple of games, or the last few games especially, that the Lakers have played against the Denver Nuggets, it does feel like an entirely different matchup. And Michael Malone talked about that a little bit before the game, talked about like the different way that the Lakers are defending now, and the different personnel that they have, and J.J. Redick as a coach, and the differences there between him and Darvin Ham. It's an entirely different matchup here. And I'm willing to be optimistic if the Lakers do face them in a series. All right. Oh yeah. Yeah. I wanted to, like, if we saw Jokic, I would have figured out a way to do like a dueling. Maybe that's what I'll do. I'll work on if we get like a Lakers Nuggets series, maybe I'll like double this clip up. I just love him falling there at the end. It's so great. But yeah, maybe if that'll be my like super analytical series breakdown between the Lakers and the Nuggets, will just be two Kirbys bouncing alongside each other. because that's all I can think about when I watch Nikola Jokic and Luka Doncic play against each other. All right. So let's see. I'm going to go through here. Ooh, man, that's a, if Denver faces Minnesota in the first round, the Lakers won't be facing them. Yeah, I know. Right now it's impossible to say who's going to be playing. So you're looking at the 6, 7, 8. Yeah. Like the 6, 7, and 8 seeds right now, you have Golden State at 40-29, the Clippers at 39-30, and Minnesota at 40-31. We still might see some reshuffling there. The Clippers have been playing really well. The Timberwolves have been playing really well. The Warriors obviously have been playing really well since Jimmy. So maybe we might not see as much shuffling there. Or maybe like one of those teams jumps up and catches Memphis, who again has been sliding at the absolute wrong spot. I believe the Grizzlies lost tonight, right? Yeah, they lost to Portland tonight. So like if Memphis continues their recent slide, maybe one of Golden State, LA, or Minnesota jumps up and faces them. But it's a my bigger thing is like the Lakers are good enough here where I would actually take kind of a similar approach to what Raj would prefer, where it's just like, you know what, play your best basketball, win as many games as you can, get as healthy as you can, and see where those chips fall wherever they do. And before it was like, avoid Denver at all costs, avoid Denver. But now that I don't necessarily feel that way, I kind of sort of feel like, you know, oh, I see what point you're making, JD. That if Denver plays Minnesota, because Minnesota has absolutely owned Denver in the ways that the Nuggets have kind of owned the Lakers the last year. So yeah, that's a fair point. But yeah, it's I don't know. These West standings are going to shuffle around a whole bunch. And I'm at the point here where, given how I feel about the Lakers against basically any of these teams, I would just prefer the Lakers go out and win as much as they can, get as healthy as they can, and then see where everybody sits at the end of the season. All right. Joey Lynch asking, who is a better third option between Aaron Gordon or Reeves? I am going to probably piss some people off on this channel and say that I think Gordon is a little bit better, especially given the way he has shot the ball this year. Gordon is legitimately one of the best defensive players in the NBA, and Austin is not one of the best offensive players in the NBA in the way that Gordon is one of the best defensive players. So I think it's relatively close. I don't think, like, if somebody was to like try to make the case for Reeves, I think there can be a case to be made for Reeves. I think Reeves is squarely in that conversation, though, like with the Aaron Gordons of the world or the Chet Holmgrens of the world, or like go through like the best third best players or whatever. Derek White comes to mind. Like, I think we're like, you know, by the end of the year, after these playoffs, if Austin has an even relatively decent playoff run, he'll be in that conversation for, you know, those kinds of players where they're probably overqualified to be the best third best player or the third best player on a team. But if they're your second best player, your team is probably not quite where you really want it to be. So, and we'll see. Like, I think Austin still has another gear to hit, weirdly. Like, the reason I say that is because every time I think that Austin might be done developing, he shows us something else. But yeah, I do think, like, more importantly than who people find better between Aaron Gordon or Austin Reeves, to me, it's absolutely incredible that Austin finds himself in a conversation or in the kinds of conversation where, like, Chet Holmgren, I believe, was the first overall pick, if not the first, probably the second or third Aaron Gordon draft. He was taken. Shoot, where was he taken? Was he in like the, I think he was like midway through the first round or so. No, he was a fourth overall pick. Aaron Gordon was. Austin Reeves was undrafted. You know, like, Austin probably could have been taken in the second round. And obviously it's been well covered to this point that his agent and agency told people, like, hey, don't take him. Can we give us that flexibility? And they kind of forced their way to the Lakers. So it's not quite like, he's not your typical undrafted player, but he also doesn't come from like draft stock where he was seen as this crazy steal in the second round either. So the fact that Austin is in that conversation with Aaron Gordon, first overall pick, Chet Holmgren, first or second overall pick, you know, I could, who's some other options here? Who's some other third best players? You guys hit me that, you know what? We can do that. Hit me with some third best players here. And we can round out the show talking about Austin being in that conversation for some of the absolute third best players. Yeah, I think, yeah, Zubats is a good one. I think Austin, I would say, is as good as Zubats, probably. Now, Zubats probably plays a slightly more important position for his team than Austin does. Jefferson, Norman Powell. I do think Austin is better than Norman Powell. Here's a funny thing. I'm not trying to be dismissive of Norman Powell. Like, I think Norm has actually had a really good season. I don't know how many playoff games he's going to be closing for that Clippers team, because James Harden is going to have the ball in his hands and they might want more defense on the court. But hey, like, at the end of the day, Norm Powell was a borderline all-star this year. If LeBron, you know, just sits out the all-star game, Norm probably makes an all-star team this year. And I think Austin is better as a basketball player than Norm Powell. Not by a ton. Like, I think Norm is right there. I think Austin is like 5 years or so younger, but like, he's right there with, you know, Norm Powell. And I think he's probably slightly better than Norm Powell. And the fact that he's Desmond Bain, I think Austin is better than Desmond Bain. Now, this is going to be a funny take. I actually think the Grizzlies will be a little bit better when they choose between Desmond Bane and Ja Morant and go out and get a better third best player than either of those guys. Darius Garland, I think he's on the same wavelength. I think Garland is a lot at Garland's absolute best. Garland is probably a little bit better because he is so lights out from so far away from the basket. But I think AR is in those conversations is I think my larger point here. And it's insane that the Lakers have somebody like, you know, look up how much money Darius Garland is making. Look up how much money Tyrese Maxey is making. Look up how much money Desmond Bane and Norman Powell's a little bit different because of the whole trade. I'd like to see how much he's actually making there. But the fact that the Lakers have a third best player who, you know, kind of wraps up a legit big three here for the Lakers and is making $12 million a year. And I got a smart comment the other day. I want to make sure I'm clear on this because, you know, somebody made the comment. I saw it in my emails about how like they are uncomfortable with like getting excited about a player being underpaid. For one thing, we're talking about guys making tens of millions of dollars to play basketball. So like these guys aren't exactly like standing outside Home Depot hoping to build your shed, right? JD, that's just mean. That's just mean. Paul, come on, JD. This season, I don't know if Paul George is as good as like Dorian Finney-Smith. He isn't. He wasn't as good as Dorian. But yeah, like the like this notion. I understand. I want players to be properly compensated, and eventually Austin is going to be properly compensated. He is eventually going to be like a $33 to $35 million a year player, so long as he stays healthy and maintains like the trajectory that he's on. But yeah, I think no. Maxey's the second best player. Jefferson's asking if Tyrese Maxey versus Austin Reeves. Tyrese Maxey might be Philly's best player, which is kind of sort of why they're screwed. Like they needed Embiid to be an MVP moving forward, and it doesn't appear he's going to be that anymore. But yeah, the fact that the Lakers have a guy that's in those conversations for $12 million a year is great for the Lakers right now. But when the time comes and they really need to pay that guy, I'm going to be rooting like hell for Austin to get every penny that he can, because one, I really like the guy. Two, I really like his entire camp. They're good people. And I want that entire camp to get paid. And then three, because it's not on the Lakers to continue to operating when they have this crazy discount. They got to figure out ways to maximize the roster when somebody like Austin is properly compensated. So It's a fair comment to make, and I should maybe watch my tone a little bit when I talk about the crazy discount that Austin is currently playing on. But at the end of the day, too, like, he's making $12 million a year. Like, how many people will you ever know who make $12 million a year ever in their lifetime, let alone in a single year, but in their lifetime? How many, like, you know, it's not a Jordan Goodwin situation where, you know, anyway, I'm not going to keep digging. All right, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge podcast. I'm going to hop back on here and record a quick lowdown in which I will narrate today's piece that I wrote for Clutch Points. And yeah, we'll go ahead and look ahead to tomorrow night's game against Milwaukee. That's going to be an interesting one because Milwaukee hasn't played very good basketball outside of the night that they beat the crap out of a really shorthanded Lakers team. They've been so bad that Giannis and Dame and Doc all got together for a super secret meeting that remained a super secret for all of 5 minutes until Dame went out and told Chris Haynes that they had that meeting. So we'll see how tomorrow night's game goes. It's nice that the Lakers already have a split overall on this 6 games and 8 nights stretch that they were on, but it would be nice to finish this thing up 4-2 and give themselves that much better a chance at the 2 seed overall at the end of the year. So until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin. Barry, is Luca hurt? His leg is bleeding. Look, man. I think he's fine. He didn't play the fourth quarter, I think. I think he's fine. But anyway, until the next time you guys hear from me, I'm Anthony Irwin saying have a great rest of your day, make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you in a little bit.